We're going to start today in Galatians 5, if you could turn there to begin. We see in Galatians 5 that the Apostle Paul, in this chapter, is comparing and contrasting the spirit and the flesh. In simple terms, what he's doing here is comparing the way of God and the way that human nature will go because of the pull of the flesh or of the world. And I've talked before in sermons, not so much up here, but definitely down in Flint, about the concept of default settings. If you've been in, you know, computers or phone apps, you're probably familiar with that term. You see that commonly in regards to software. And most programs or apps, what they have is different customizable settings where you can choose a different font, for example. So you can change the letter styles or the size or the color. Maybe it's to turn sounds on or off. Those are customizable settings. And so what you do is you have all sorts of things within those settings that you can customize that app or that program to suit your personal taste. But when you first start the program, very first time, what you will see are the default settings. That's what you begin with. Thank you. And we see the same thing in human beings. See, we are born with human nature that is a mixture of good and evil. And they are our default settings. And that default setting is unique for each and every person. And as we grow up, we end up with our customized settings. Some of it's from our upbringing, our families, the environment, school, friends, church, major events that happen in our lives. And some of the changes are things that happen to you, and some are changes that you choose to make yourself. Now, the world itself, and when we say the world, we are talking about the prevailing attitudes and behaviors of mankind throughout the ages, to one degree or another. And sometimes it's blatant, it's right in our face, and other times they can take more sneaky forms. But these prevailing attitudes are the default settings for mankind. Galatians 5:19. Paul tells us in Galatians 5:19 what these default settings are, the natural inclinations of human nature, what he terms the works of the flesh. So Galatians 5:19 says, "Now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like, of which I tell you beforehand, just as I told you also in time past, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God." See, these are all behaviors that to one degree or another we will struggle against because they are default settings for us. Now, we may not actually commit some of these acts, but we also understand that it is the attitude that is just as, if not more, important. And we need to realize that they are a natural place for us to return to. And we need to be on guard against this because Paul tells us that the default setting for mankind is to not inherit the kingdom of God. If you are going to inherit the kingdom of God, you are going to have to change your settings. And Paul continues on to give us attributes that will show up in our lives and in our character when we're being led not by our human nature, but by the Spirit of God. When we change the way that we lead our lives, to change our settings from the way of the world to the way of God. And here's a list of things that we should see as results. We see the fruit of the Spirit. Verse 22, "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such, there is no law. So today we're going to focus on one fruit of the Spirit that we just read, kindness. And beyond that, we're going to look at an aspect of kindness that you may not have considered before. So, kindness. How important is kindness? There was a study done in 2003. It was a study of 37 cultures around the world. 16,000 subjects were asked about their most desired traits in a mate. For both sexes, the first preference was kindness. That's fascinating. See, all around the world, there is a longing for kindness from their mate. It comes before physical attraction. It comes before a sense of humor or any other trait. Kindness is what they want. But what is the default setting for mankind? Well, verses 19 to 21 told us that adultery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, envy, murders, the exact opposite of kindness is what you are likely to get. And why is this? Because people want to be treated kindly, but they have a harder time being kind themselves. A large-scale study of school bullies was recently conducted to try to learn why they bully other kids. The conclusion was that most of them enjoy doing it. See, this illustrates how cruel, mean, and sadistic raw human nature can be. See, and this may also explain something that we see constantly when we see people speak out against God, saying that God's being unfair to them. But they refuse to look at their own life to see how they are treating others. Now, I've always laughed at those people who think that human nature is inherently good. See, these people have never seen three small children in a sandbox with only two toys. What we find out is that kindness must be learned. Let's turn over to Philippians 2, verse 3. It's a learned behavior. When it comes to bullies, those who end up being bullies, they're typically not taught kindness. So that human nature comes to the forefront. So, kindness, what is it? Well, kindness is the opposite of our human nature. It's caring concern for others. So, Philippians 2, verse 3 gets down to the essence of it. It says, "Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others." See, our innate human nature must be replaced by God's nature. That can only happen by receiving the gift of God's Spirit indwelling within us and the wonderful fruit that it produces. Love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. See, here's the truth about life. No matter who you are, no matter where you are, or what you would like, you have to interact with other people. It starts with our parents, then our siblings, school classmates, co-workers, spouses, and children. Our lives are made up of relationships, and relationships are what help make our lives enjoyable and meaningful. But broken relationships can make our lives miserable. See, the simple fact of the matter is that our relationships work best when we get along. And a crucial ingredient in a solid relationship where people get along is kindness. Now, kindness is such a large subject that we do need to narrow our focus. So that's what we're going to do here today. Today we are going to focus on a specific type of kindness, affirmation. We're going to see what it is, how it relates to kindness, and of course what God tells us about this aspect of kindness in His Word. So let's start with defining what we mean by affirmation. Now, the dictionary definition that is relevant here is the following. It's a statement intended to provide encouragement, emotional support, or motivation, especially when used for the purpose of auto-suggestion. Intended to provide encouragement, emotional support, or motivation, especially when used for the purpose of auto-suggestion. Now, remember what the study about the number one trait that people hope that they find in a mate. It's kindness. So what does kindness look like? Does it include encouragement? How about emotional support? You know, when you're feeling weak or overwhelmed, would motivation help you? See, these are all aspects of kindness. And we just saw that these very things are contained in affirmations. So an affirmation is quite literally a statement of kindness. Now, you should have two pieces of paper. One says, you are, and the other says, I am. Please raise your hand if you don't have both of those pieces of paper. All right. Nice job, Kevin. Thumbs up, right? At this time, please write your name, first and last, on the back of the piece of paper that says, you are. Put your name on the back of the you are. And if you could pass it to the end of the row, and we're going to have those picked back up. Now, after those have been collected, I'll ask the ushers to then pass them back out randomly so that you will have the name of another member of the congregation. All right. So back to affirmations. What does an affirmation sound like? What does it do? Why does it work? Well, here's what neuroscience is finding out. See, I always love when science finally gets around to proving what God has been telling mankind all along. I love that. And what we find is that affirmations, those positive statements of encouragement, of emotional support, motivation, inspiration, a statement like, happiness is a choice. I base my happiness on the blessings I've been given. Okay, that's what is called a self-affirmation. It's something that you tell to yourself. Sounds pretty cheesy, doesn't it? But even if it sounds goofy to you, guess what? It works. Affirmations are like exercise for your brain. If you've ever felt great after a workout because your blood is pumping and you feel stirred up, you've stirred up the feel-good hormones that are in our body. Those same feel-good hormones are raised, and our brain forms new clusters of neurons when we use affirmations. See, remember that concept in the introduction, that concept of default settings. In our minds, they literally take the form of neural pathways. But here's the thing that's incredible. We get to change those pathways to create new ones, to create new positive pathways that create new settings in our minds and in our lives. If you currently have neural pathways that lead you to worry, to always see the negative in every situation, to constantly feel overwhelmed, or to see the worst in yourself and in others, you can change. But it's not easy to change, is it? How many of you had history classes back in school? Everybody raise your hand. We all had to go through it. How many of you studied ancient Rome? So what do you remember about Rome? One of the things that you may remember is that the Romans were great road builders. Even today, 2,000 years later, there are many roads in Europe that are still being used that were built by the Romans. And in many of these roads, if you look closely, you can see ruts that are in them. those ruts were designed by the engineers. So what they were put in there for was to direct ox cart traffic. So once an ox cart got lined up in the ruts, the driver didn't have to do anything. Everything flowed easily, and the carts could basically drive themselves. We do the same thing in our brains. See, when we do something over and over and over and over again, we create pathways in our brains that act as ruts. Usually we call them habits. See, when we're faced with doing something or thinking about something, our default, our habit, our rut, it's to go to these ruts, to go to these pathways that are already in our brains to process and to act on it. So these affirmations, these statements that are designed to create new positive neural pathways in our minds, why do they work? They work because of two things. Words have power. And because we are made in the image of our Creator. See, we're told in Genesis 1, verse 26, that mankind was made in the image of God. And we see that man was given special abilities far beyond that of any other animals that were created. Among these abilities that we have are reason, self-awareness, creativity, and speech. We are the only species that God created with these unique abilities. And how did God create? Let's go right back to the beginning. Genesis 1. Genesis 1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Verse 3, then God said, let there be light, and there was light. Verse 6, then God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. Verse 9, then God said, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. Verse 11, then God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb, the fruit tree, and it was so. Verse 14, then God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens. Verse 20, then God said, let the waters abound with an abundance of living creatures. Verse 24, then God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind. And verse 26, let us make man in our image according to our likeness. In every step of the creation process, God said. God literally spoke it, and it became so. And amazingly, we also have this same power, although in a much smaller fashion than God. And that does sound incredible, doesn't it? Or it sounds like some woo-woo, New Age stuff. But it's not. In Matthew 17, verse 20, Matthew 17, verse 20, we read how Jesus' disciples, they were not able to cure a boy who had a demon. Jesus steps in and banishes the demon. And the disciples went to him and asked why they were unable to cast it out themselves. What Jesus tells them is amazing. Verse 20. So Jesus said to them, because of your unbelief, for assuredly I say to you, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you. You will say to this mountain, move, and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you. What we are told here is that our words have power. Great power. But remember what our human nature is. Let's go to James chapter 3. speaking of the power of our words, James gives us warnings. James 3, verses 5 through 8 says, "Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature. And it is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creatures of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison." See, never forget the power that your words have. See, the words that we speak and the words that we hear have very real effects on our lives. Who we are, how we see the world, and how we interact with others. And this includes what we say to others and what we say to ourselves. Because, yes, you're not crazy. We all talk to ourselves constantly. We quite literally live in our heads, and over 70% of the words that we hear on a daily basis are the words that we speak to ourselves silently in our minds. So what are you telling yourself? See, we're fast approaching the days of unleavened bread, and I don't know about you, but the time leading up to these days, the soul searching that we do, we are examining all of the ways in which we're coming up short and the changes that we need to make in ourselves. And we're talking to ourselves and to God when we pray about all of these things. And it's easy to feel like we are beating ourselves up if we're not careful. Let's turn to Isaiah 40. Because here in Isaiah 40, we see a wonderful affirmation. Statements of encouragement. Isaiah 40, verse 1, proclaims comfort. Yes, comfort my people, says your God. Speak comfort to Jerusalem. And then we see in verse 28 that these are words from the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth. And then we read after this a series of affirmations for us, these encouraging words. It says, "He gives power to the weak. And to those who have no might, he increases strength. Those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint." Now let's tweak these just a bit from the poetry to get to what God is affirming to you. Verse 29, "I, the Lord, give power to you, and I increase your strength." Verses 30 to 31, "Even when everyone else tires around you, wait on me. I will renew your strength so that you will not tire, and you will be able to fly like an eagle." And when you've been having a hard day, wouldn't it be nice to have someone tell you, "Hey, I got your back. You've got this. You just need to keep doing what you're doing." See, we don't have just someone telling us this. We have our Creator telling us this very thing. Over and over and over, we read statements of encouragement, emotional support, and motivation for our lives. We constantly read affirmations. And we're going to continue with our little exercise here. What I would now like you to do is to think for a moment about the person whose name you have on your piece of paper. And then write down an affirmation for that person. A statement of encouragement or support or motivation. Think about what that person does, what that person stands for, or what you admire them for. Obviously, it starts with the words, "You are." Now complete the thought about that person. And then you can write that down and pass it to the end of the row for the ushers to pick up when you are done. After services are concluded, the fun part is trying to find your name in the pile. One of the lessons that we learn during the days of unleavened bread is the concept that if we are going to take out the leavening, those sinful habits that we have, that human nature that we fight against, we then have to replace it with something else. Now, as Christians, with God's help through this, through His Spirit, we are to take the sin out of our lives and we're to replace it with His righteousness. And let's face it, quite often we need to fake it till we make it. Because it's hard to stop sinning. I think that most of us have sinful habits or attitudes that are so ingrained in our character and the way that we live our lives and the way that we think that we know that it is only through God's Spirit and power that we will be able to make that change that we know that we need to make. But we also know that God is not going to just simply wave His hands and make us change. He expects us to work at it and to grow. I find it interesting that so many times in the Bible we see analogies to trees or to plants. We're going to look at one of these in Luke 6, verse 43. Luke 6, verse 43, this is during a parallel account that we find of the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5 to 7, but we're in Luke 6, 43, where Jesus says, "For a good tree does not bear bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. For every tree is known by its own fruit. For men do not gather figs from thorns, nor do they gather grapes from a bramble bush. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings forth evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks." Anyone who has fruit trees or who has planted a garden, they understand that there's a lot of work that goes into the growing process, both by the one who does the planting as well as the work done by the tree or the plant itself. See, fruit doesn't just magically appear out of nowhere. It's a process that's followed, and it takes time. Now, we will soon be, you know, believe it or not, even after the snow, we will soon be at the time of the season when the fruit trees will be budding. But is the bud the fruit? No, it's a step. Then the flowers will come. Again, is that the fruit? No, it's just simply a beautiful step along the way. And if we follow along through the season, we see the fruit starting to form, to grow, and to ripen to perfection if they are cared for. You have insects and birds and disease and severe weather. See, those are the dangers for the fruit trees. For us, we need to be on guard for the temptations of the world and the traps that Satan sets for us. And we need to be on guard against those default settings of human nature that I alluded to at the beginning of the message. Let's look at that last sentence in verse 45 once more. Jesus Christ tells us, "For out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks." This is not a one-time idea that Jesus Christ just threw out there. See, he comes back to this idea with the same exact words in Matthew 12, verse 34. But here's the concept. What comes out of your mouth is what is in your heart. So our question is this. How do we put good things in our heart so good things come out of our mouth? See, one of the ways is through affirmations. We're going to look now at four ways that affirmations put good things in our heart and in the hearts of others. Now, some of these we've already covered, so we're going to summarize some of this. The first one is you get more of what you affirm. Have you ever noticed that when someone praises you, you want to repeat the behavior that caused it? This is just human nature. Now, it can be a form of manipulation if it's not genuine. But it can be a powerful way to motivate others when it's authentic. See, there's a saying in the business world that holds true for all of life because it actually comes from Proverbs. Proverbs 3, verse 27, no need to turn there. But Proverbs 3, verse 27 tells us, "Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in the power of your hand to do so." See, in the business world, it's a little bit more pithy. It says, catch people doing good work and encourage more of it. This works in the opposite, though, too. You're going to get more of what you complain about. If you focus on the negative, you'll notice it all the time. Very much like what Clay was telling us in the sermon, or in the sermonette. And if you're staying negative, it's going to poison your relationships, every one of them, your spouse, your kids, your colleagues, your brethren, and so on. See, it pays to be positive. Notice the good things and affirm them. Call them out. If you are struggling in a relationship, think about the positive aspects of that person and acknowledge them. I appreciate you for, fill in the blank. It needs to be specific and it needs to be genuine. They might look at you strangely at first if you do this, but if you keep at it, it will have results. Second, affirmation shifts your attitude. Affirmation shifts your attitude. Words are powerful tools. We already saw that. They can create or they can destroy. They can build up or they can tear down. Most people have a natural drive to align their actions and their attitudes with their words. People do like to be consistent. See, because remember what Christ said. We speak out of the abundance of the heart. Now, affirmations help us to work the other end of it. See, if we speak positives about ourselves and others, we will change our heart. It works both ways, and it helps to drive toward harmony between your heart and your words and actions. See, we have a choice as we go through life. We can either notice the positive or we can stew in the negative. If we focus on the positive, it will eventually bring our attitude into alignment. Third, affirmation strengthens other people's best qualities. Affirmation strengthens other people's best qualities. Encouragement is a powerful force for good. It is an aspect of kindness, the spiritual fruit that we're talking about today. See, all of us need positive reinforcement and encouragement. See, this is why when we're working to develop a positive habit, maybe it's to lose some weight, a little encouragement from people who notice our efforts can keep us going. And this is true in every area of life. For example, say your marriage might not be all that great right now. So what are you doing about it? Have you forgotten that your spouse has great qualities? They do, or else you wouldn't have married them in the first place. If you're in a rough patch in your marriage, you might have your doubts about trying affirmations, but you really do need to try it. Maybe your spouse is really brave in one area, or they're kind, or considerate, or perseverant. Affirm those qualities, and they'll only get stronger, and you'll find more areas to affirm. Think about what that means. By affirming your spouse, or anyone that you come into contact with, you're helping them become all that they were created to be. Fourth, affirmation provides a model to those who lead. Affirmation provides a model to those you lead. You've been called by God for a special purpose, to be a part of His kingdom at Christ's return. Now, we're not going to be sitting around on clouds playing harps. We are going to be leaders and teachers to show God's way of life to those who live in the millennium. Now, think for a minute about all of these people and what they will have just gone through. They will have seen well more than half of the human race die off in one fashion or another in just a period of a few years. They've seen devastation and disaster on a scale that had never been seen up to that point, and they are going to be traumatized and in need of care and of loads of kindness, and they're going to need plenty of affirmation from you. But to be truly effective as a leader, first you need to lead yourself. And part of leading yourself is to affirm in yourself the positive things that you are working toward, to visualize what you are becoming right now. You still have your other piece of paper. This one says, I am. So what are you? What are you working on? What do you need to work on? Can you see where you need to improve in your life? See, affirmations work on our minds and our hearts because they fool them into believing that they already are. So what you need to do is picture the person that you want to be. And you need to write that down as if you are already that person. Here's an affirmation for you. You may want to write this one down. Not in place of, but in addition to. I am made in the image of God. I act like it. Let's take a couple of moments to fill out your self-affirmation. Now, earlier in this message, we looked at how we literally have the means to have the power to change through our words and through our thoughts. Let's turn to Isaiah 46, verse 8. Isaiah 46, beginning in verse 8, we see how powerful God is in this way. To be able to create and to influence through his words and his thoughts. It says, remember this and show yourselves men. Recall to mind, O you transgressors. Remember the former things of old. For I am God and there is no other. I am God and there is none like me. Declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times, things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will do all my pleasure. Calling a bird of prey from the east, the man who executes my counsel from a far country. Indeed, I have spoken it. I will also bring it to pass. I have purposed it. I will also do it. See, in a small way, God has given us minds made in his image that can do this in a limited, yet still very powerful way. See, there is no question, there is none like God. But here's something for us to consider. Remember the fruit tree analogy that Christ gave. There are two parties at work, the planter and the plant, working together. That's God and you working together to bear good fruit. See, that is God's will for every one of us. For us to bear fruit and to be a part of his kingdom. And he says, my counsel shall stand and I will do all my pleasure. God wants us in his kingdom. That is most definitely something that falls within the concept of his pleasure. Indeed, I've spoken it. I will also bring it to pass. I've purposed it. I will also do it. So God has already said that he will do it. Will you? Will you also speak it? Will you help God to bring it to pass? Have you purpose to do it? And will you do it? Before you can lead others, you must lead yourself. So at this point, we've written down an affirmation for yourself. Hopefully it's something that can lead you to consider something heading into the days of unleavened bread that you can work on to become that person that God is calling you to be. I am what? Only you can answer that question. And you can share it with your family, with your friends, or you can keep it between you and God. But I leave you with a challenge. For the next 30 days, say these affirmations out loud. Your personal affirmation that you wrote down and the one that you will find from one of your brethren. Say it out loud for the next 30 days and see where it leads you. See, affirmations are not some new age woo-woo thing. They are an expression of the incredible potential that God has given to us. And they're a valuable tool in helping to align us to his will, to help us to grow, and to help others to grow as well. To help us to create a virtuous cycle. See, we put good things into our heart so that good words come out of it. And affirmations are truly a powerful aspect of kindness. They're encouraging, they're motivating, and they are supporting statements that help you to draw closer to God and to grow into a strong Christian.